You're about to get stuck into another edition of the GP Fans Stewards Room podcast, breaking down all of the action from a racing weekend in the world of Formula One. And if you like what you hear and what you see, you can rate, review and subscribe to the podcast on all good podcasting outlets, including Spotify, Anchor.fm, our host, and iTunes as well. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can hit the subscribe button down below to stay up to date with all of our content there. And if you like the musings of Ewan Gale, Sam Hall or Ian Parks, follow Twitter or Instagram at GPFansGlobal to stay up to date with all of the breaking news in the world of Formula One, or even just get on the website gpfans.com. But now let's get into the show. Welcome back to another edition of the GP Fans Stewards Room podcast, breaking down all of the action from a racing weekend. There's so much to get into. We might be going on for a long time this week because the Brazilian Grand Prix in Sao Paulo at the iconic Interlagos circuit served up a stupendous sprint weekend. And breaking it down with me are the boffins, the brain trust, whatever you want to call them. They are the stewards that make up the stewards room. Sam Hall, Ewan Gale and Ian Parks. Myself, Ollie Wilson, of course, we'll be diving into all of it. Ian, you are on your travels at the moment and there's a few technical difficulties as well, such as life on the road for a roaming F1 journalist. But how was Brazil for you, my friend?
It was quite epic, wasn't it? I think it overall, it produced arguably the best weekend of the season so far, which is strange when you think about it, because the titles are over, there's nothing on the line, and then we go and have an amazing weekend like that that was just crammed full of action from start to finish, great qualifying, cracking sprint, and so many noises and stories coming out of that Grand Prix. As you say, we could be here a little while discussing this one.
Yeah, we started with the fun and frolics of qualifying on Friday in the damp, Sam. And everybody, I think, in the Formula One world was elated for Kevin Magnussen, who put himself on pole for the sprint on Saturday. And then as the weekend drew on, order was kind of restored, but there's been a little reshuffle up towards the top of the pile in F1.
Yeah, Ewan's going to be gutted that you've mentioned Magnussen to me, especially as he repositioned his Magnussen helmet for maximum efficiency on YouTube. But it was one of those feel-good stories, wasn't it? You don't get many of them in a season, and if you had them every week, they wouldn't be as interesting as they are at the moment. And there is no single person that was unhappy for that Kevin got pole position. Even Pierre Gasly in AlphaTauri's fight for eighth in the Constructors' Championship with Haas, his reaction, he was pleased for him, then went, oh, someone better go and check on Franz because he might not be so happy. But you couldn't help but feel good. And then that race, what a race it was. And we'll get into that in a minute, I suspect.
All right, Ewan, let's kick things off then. We've put a little bit of the qualifying fun and frolics from Friday to bed already. Kevin Magnussen, of course, surviving the wet conditions at Interlagos and able with a bit of good fortune as well to stick himself on pole. The sprint race then reshuffled the grid as we were expecting, but Sunday was just spectacular. And it kicked off from the word go with Kevin Magnussen involved again, but unfortunately for negative reasons at the start of the race.
Yeah, and just on Kevin there, I think that for me, despite how brilliant Saturday was with the sprint, that exact incident is everything that's wrong with the format for me, just because you've had someone who's done such a brilliant job on Friday, a brilliant job on Saturday, did everything they needed to do. And then because they've got a second start, he's been taken out of the race weekend. But focusing on the track action, what a circuit Interlagos is. It feels like almost every season we have a race there. There is drama, chaos, overtaking, 62 overtakes in the race alone this year, which is just stunning, isn't it? Of course, there's a little bit down to the new regulations. But then we've seen over the years that a lot of the overtaking has been on the main straight. This year, we've got less slipstream, and yet it was still effective. So it's a stunning racetrack. And the drivers, for the most part, were on absolute tip-top behavior. Obviously, there were a few that couldn't keep themselves away from each other, as I'm sure we're going to dissect in a short while.
Ian, there was one driver who seemed to be attracting plenty of attention this weekend and kind of for all the wrong reasons in the end. Let's talk about Max Verstappen. You were at Interlagos. What was the atmosphere like when Verstappen and Hamilton from the restart on lap 7 went crunching into each other through the first couple of bends at Interlagos? I mean, it looked on television like that place was going to explode when Hamilton and Max started to renew their rivalry from last year once more.
Got to think as well, Ollie, that we'd had in the build-up Lewis becoming an honorary citizen of Brazil. So, for all intents and purposes, we had an actual Brazilian driver on the grid. He was their home hero. And every move he made in qualifying, in the sprint, when he made overtakes during the sprint, it was cheered to the rafters. So you can imagine that for them, he was their focus of attention. And as I say, everything he did, eyes were glued. So you can imagine that incident when that happened, and in particular when the replays were shown. And for me, I'm going to say, regardless of what the regulations are today, regardless of what Max said, oh, he left me no room, for me, Max absolutely pushed Lewis off the circuit. He made no attempt to turn in to turn two. He kept his steering wheel straight and Lewis had nowhere to go effectively. That's my read of it. I'm sure there's going to be lots of comments thrown at me saying, no, you're wrong. You don't know what you're on about. Fair enough. I'm just one voice, millions out there. But as you rightly call, the atmosphere then just ramped up. Because all of a sudden, it's what we've waited for all season, for Max and Lewis to go at it again, reminding us of just how bitter their rivalry was last season. And quite clearly, given the comments of both post-race, it's now firmly back on.
I tell you what, before Ewan gives the contrary opinion to Ian's for the incident between Hamilton and Verstappen, I will agree with Ian, but for a slightly different reason. Max was out of control of his car. You saw when he went into the second part of the corner, he had gone over the curb and he had bounced on, it was a relatively small sausage curb, but he bounced across that. He was out of control of his car, which is dangerous driving. It doesn't matter, you've got two pedals in there, as the saying goes, and you can use either one. He chose to keep his foot in it, which, in a gap that was always going to disappear, because anyone who's ever driven that on a simulator or online or in real life, you know that that gap, that corner has one line, you take it as that. Max went into a gap, disappearing. He was behind at the apex of the corner. It wasn't his corner. And yes, Martin Brundle believed at the time and called it at the time, stuck with his guns, to be fair to him, that it was Lewis's fault predominantly. I'm with Ian in that it was Max's fault, and the penalty, despite having to stop anyway for damage, which that should never factor into a penalty-making decision, but for me, that was justified, the penalty against Max there.
I'm not sure I totally disagree. I think I understand why the penalty was handed out. I do think that there is enough of a 50-50 in it for it to be a racing incident, because as much as Verstappen hasn't made the corner, he's run wide, he's off on the runoff as well, so therefore he must have pushed Lewis Hamilton off. I do think he was sufficiently alongside. I mean, he was at least half the car up alongside, having been ahead at the corner before, to have earned a bit more room. The question then boils down, and we'll never know this answer, but what happens if he's side by side with Leclerc in the same situation? What happens if he's side by side with Carlos Sainz, for example, in the same situation? And from what we've seen over the last year and a half, 2 years, you have to believe that it would be a different outcome. And even listening to his comments post-race, and actually, you know, I feel like I've defended Verstappen across the 2 years with this battle with Lewis. But I didn't enjoy listening to his comments after the race. It sounded as if he had the mindset of, I'm going to crash into you. And I don't know whether others feel like that's unfair to read that from what he said, but he essentially said, Lewis lost the win, I lost 5 seconds, it didn't matter, we were slow anyway. So I wasn't too impressed by that, to be completely honest.
Wait, so there we can let us go on. It's apologies.
I sort of say there was a lot going on with those Max comments as well. And obviously, this is again something that we're going to build into now with regard to the Checo Perez radio call. Just to give you a little bit of background as to the animated nature of Max behind those quotes. If we think what happened at the end, he refused to let Checo by. Straight away, once he got out the car, he was ushered straight through the media pen, both written and TV, so he didn't stop. Normally, as we know, drivers, as soon as they come out of the cars, they go into the TV and the written media, and then they go back to their motorhomes, get changed, etc. On this occasion, straight through, straight down to the Red Bull paddock building. Conversations took place there for quite some time, and when Max finally emerged, he was chatting to his manager, Raymond Vermeulen. And this was in plain view of a number of TV cameras, a number of media that myself were watching on at this particular time. Then Christian came in and joined the conversation. Then Helmut Marko came in, joined the conversation. Jonathan Wheatley, the team manager, was there as well. And there was this quite animated conversation going on between the five of them. And then finally, Max was released to go and do his media. By the time he got round to doing it, you kind of sense everything had been sorted out and resolved. But I also got the feeling was he wasn't entirely happy. So with some of the comments that he was giving, in particular in relation to the Lewis situation, and I agree with what Ewan has said because I was there listening to his comments at the time, it was a feeling of, I don't care, hell or high water, you've not given me space. It's your problem. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's crash into one another. And that's exactly what's happened. So from that perspective, as well, looking in on that, I feel Max was fully justified in getting the penalty on this occasion.
Yeah.
Well, so a weekend where Verstappen has not exactly covered himself in marketable glory, because you've got that moment where, I mean, that felt like two ice hockey enforcers that just have no interest in the race going on around them, and they suddenly drop their gloves and their stick and they're next to each other and it's like, let's go. Let's have at each other. We've still got this rivalry. And then, as you mentioned, Ian, we have the incident with Checo Perez at the end of the race, which is a number of people have likened it to what Sebastian Vettel did to Mark Webber at Red Bull as well. Others have just said that it's perhaps something that stems back from Monaco, when Perez was victorious for Red Bull that weekend. And Red Bull certainly seemed to back Perez in that drive over Verstappen at a couple of different points. But there's something going on between Verstappen and Perez that meant that Verstappen took the place away, sixth place away from Sergio Perez, when Perez is the one that needs the points to outdo Charles Leclerc in the race for second in the Drivers' World title. And Verstappen isn't then thinking about the team game, he's thinking about an individual's game, which I imagine was a great length discussed between Helmut Marko and Christian Horner and others at that point, because Red Bull would love to finish this with the perfect season with the Drivers' World Championship, the Constructors' World Championship, and one and two in the Drivers' World Championship standings. But Verstappen's gone rogue this weekend. I've no idea what you can put your finger on to mean that he's made the actions that he has done.
Yeah, they've never had a 1-2 in the championship standings, remarkably, for all of Vettel's years of dominance. But the word for me is petulant, and that's exactly what Verstappen was this weekend. He was petulant. It's in Formula One, yes, it's an individual sport, or there's an individual championship, but it's a team sport first and foremost. And you don't hire the team to work for you. You work for the team. So to go against what your employer is saying directly, that's, to be honest, if if Verstappen was a lesser driver at a lesser team, he may well be looking now at not racing next year. Sort of, other teams wouldn't stand for this, but you can't exactly sack a two-time and the reigning champion, so that's not going to happen. But Max, he's one of those pantomime villains almost, isn't he? You want to like him. You really want to. So you think this season he's turned a corner in all of his wheel-to-wheel battling. He's been a lot fairer. He's left space, and it's been this respectful rivalry where there's been competition. But as soon as it's Lewis up against him again, he couldn't take it. And then when it was his teammate, like we're saying with Perez, it was multi-21 again. And I don't think this is something that's going to go away. You mentioned Monaco. It's believed that this was sparked by qualifying at Monaco, where Perez, I believe, was third, and he spun his car, crashed his car on the final qualifying lap, and Max, who was improving, couldn't improve his time, so started behind him, ultimately didn't win. If that is true, that's... I can't step away from
that's
the word.
That's a long grudge.
I can't step away that's from the word grudge, petulance. Though. It's unacceptable, is what it is.
For everything that Perez has done in the last few years as well. Let's not forget when the championship was still on, he got out of the way in Baku, didn't fight. Okay, Max had the pace anyway, but he didn't fight him. He pulled across for him. That's just an example. But you know, last season, if you go to Abu Dhabi, all of that drama at the end of the race wouldn't have happened without Perez, because Perez held Hamilton up enough for Verstappen to get into Hamilton's pit window, which effectively, as we now know, took away Mercedes' option to make a pit stop, because it meant that Verstappen would have been in front. So, yeah, I'm not for 1 minute saying that Verstappen won the championship because of Perez, but he was a massive help in that situation. It's a complete lack of respect to the whole team, whether that's trackside or at the factory. A massive lack of respect. It's a complete lack of class for all of those reasons. The other thing as well is, yeah, Sam pointed to the fact that it's all come out after the Lewis Hamilton thing, but I thought he lacked a bit of class all weekend. A quote has stuck with me since qualifying. There were tons and tons of outpouring of support for Kevin Magnussen after his pole position. And I know that there is a certain sort of selfishness. You need to be the best in your field in any sport. It's been proven in every sport that the best have a certain version of themselves. You know, that's not a problem. But at no stage in his Parc Fermé interview did he reference Kevin Magnussen. And there was one line as well where he said, all of our proper opposition is behind. That was pretty much the only reference to the fact that there was a Haas up there. I just thought it showed a complete lack of respect compared to his rivals who were up there with him. And if that's the Verstappen that we're going to have carry forward, then we know that F1's starting to become a bit of a popularity game, especially with all of the stuff going off track, social media, Netflix. Now, he's only hurting himself. And he's going to hurt himself next season if he needs Sergio Perez to help him as well.
Just quickly, Ian, I want to ask you this. Sam mentioned multi-21. I referenced it as well with Vettel and Webber. Is this worse? Because Vettel at that point was still fighting for a title. Max Verstappen has done everything he needs to do this season. The only thing that needs to be put in place now is Sergio Perez finishing second. So for Verstappen to outdo Perez for no real reason at all and go against team orders, does that actually make it even more controversial, more dramatic, and far more of a slap in the face to his own team than perhaps Vettel and Webber back in the day?
To answer your question directly, yes. What has surprised me is the fact that not only has Max carried this grudge, as you say, it's come at a point when he has decided to act, when, as again has been mentioned, the team is fighting to help Checo clinch this second place in the driver's standings, because they've never had that. Even through that dominant era when Seb won his four titles, they never had a 1-2 with Webber. So Max has chosen a very unusual time to do this. Now, what I haven't mentioned and what has not yet been corroborated is that Checo deliberately crashed in Monaco. For what reason? For what reason? I cannot get to the bottom of what ascertained this yet. But that was the rumour sweeping the paddock yesterday. Where was the incident that Max was on about?
Porsche.
When it became apparent, it was Monaco. But what was the situation that led to it? Well, apparently, as I say, the rumour sweeping the paddock is that Checo has confessed to both Christian Horner and Helmut Marko that he did that deliberately. Now, if that is absolutely the case, and I'm not sure whether that's ever going to come out, if that is the case, then if one driver deserves to be sacked, then it's Sergio Perez.
Yeah.
Mm.
There is absolutely no way any driver, no matter what is going through your head, should do something like that. But what I don't get is, what did he have to gain? It wasn't like he was on pole position and he crashed. He was only in third place because the two Ferraris were already ahead of him on track and in terms of the standings, the timing standings at the time. And obviously Carlos, who was behind Checo, ended up crashing into Checo because Checo had hit the barrier. So that's a little bit of that story that I don't quite understand as to why, if he did it, if it was deliberate, why did he do it deliberately?
I can tell you what he did have to gain on that, Ian. It's track position at Monaco, isn't it?
Yeah, but
you don't want to start you don't want to start fourth, potentially behind another car, if you've got the opportunity to start third as he did.
That doesn't wash with me when you smash your rear end to pieces and risk taking a gearbox penalty that puts you five places back.
Mm.
And then we say about Max, did he deliberately make contact with Lewis? And when you go down this rabbit hole, it becomes very murky and dark very, very quickly. And Ian is bang on when he says you cannot, no driver, no matter who you are, can crash a car deliberately. We saw what it did to Nelson Piquet Jr.'s career at Singapore all those years ago, and he was basically cast out of F1. It wasn't even a conversation, and only because they're two high-profile drivers is this a conversation, rather than going, if it does transpire that that's the case, that, yeah, that's the only thing that's stopping this from...
As I say, let's just caveat this with the fact that it is all rumour, it is all speculation, but quite clearly, what we can state categorically is Max had a grudge against Checo for something that happened earlier in the season. And for me, to do that against your teammate is fundamentally also wrong. Mm. So Max is not coming out of this covered with glory. If it is to believe what Checo did, he's not coming out of this covered in any kind of glory. And all of a sudden, from what has been a glorious season for Red Bull and Max Verstappen, we're coming towards the end of it, and there's now, it's tainted in some respects. And for all of Christian Horner's comments, yesterday when he was pushed on it in his media session, it's behind. We've spoken about it. We're not going to discuss what it is, but they've shaken hands. We go forward. Everybody's now working together for Checo to get the second place in the driver's standings. They might have shook hands on it, and they might have been, you know, they might have got on well for quite some period of time up until Monaco, and then Max has held this grudge over Checo, but it's now a completely different relationship going forward into next season. If, and I say if, they are still teammates next season, if Red Bull decide not to make a decision one way or another, that maybe, and we know which driver more than likely it would be that get pushed out, if they decide that Checo, they don't want to continue with him going forward, if, and again I use a big if, what I've mentioned earlier with regards to Monaco and him and doing these actions deliberately are to be believed. We will wait and see.
You can tell Mercedes gave us the check this week, can't you? Tinfoil hats on. We've got conspiracy theories flying around about the second driver. We've got the petulance of the first driver at Red Bull. It's certainly not an Interlagos
weekend.
I'll tell you someone
who'll be watching this really
yep.
absolutely rubbing his hands. There's a fella called Mr. Daniel Ricciardo.
Is that from his perch after lap one?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he fancies a go, doesn't he?
Although he has said, after rumours appeared this weekend, that it was a done deal that he was signing as a reserve driver for Red Bull. We'll just cover this one off so quickly. He has said that there is no deal in place, nothing signed yet. So it still could be a toss of a coin, Mercedes or Red Bull, but could he be in a race seat alongside Max next year?
God, I'd love to see that.
The problem for Red Bull is they now have a relationship between their two drivers that is fundamentally broken, because both now know they cannot trust each other.
I was going to throw a small just little thing to think about him. And I don't know whether this is fair, and I don't know, you know, Sam and Ian can pick me up if they think I'm being disingenuous, but it feels like Max has had a change in tone, a change in body language, and a change in personality almost since the budget cap breach was confirmed. And I'm just wondering whether that wind tunnel hit is worrying him and his camp, knowing that he signed on until, what, 2028 it is, isn't it? Is there a bit of worry there, and is potentially the fracture between him and Perez, or is there going to start to be fractures between him and Red Bull? Again, there's absolutely no way you can back that up in the same way as we were saying about Perez and Monaco. But if you look back since the budget cap breach happened, all of a sudden then you had the boycott of Sky Sports, which, you know, they've said the same thing all season. So it came straight after that. And now we've had the thing with Lewis and his reaction to that. And we had the thing with Checo, where he could have, you know, acted differently to Sergio all the way through the season up to now as well.
I see where
you're
coming
from. I mean,
this could
also be a case of it's a driver's world champion that has a bigger asterisk after that budget cap breach as well to his first world championship. And then he has the awkward announcement of his second world title, which now has an asterisk over it as well because of that budget cap breach. So that could well be playing on his mind too, in terms of his overall feeling of how he sits in Formula One legacy right now. He's going to be arguably one of the first two-time world champions that so many people will say, well, is he? Nobody says that about Fernando Alonso. Nobody says that about a Lewis Hamilton, but Max Verstappen is going to carry the weight of that burden around because of Red Bull and their actions that he really could do nothing about, in the same way he could do nothing about the FIA, but it's just going to hang over him. Look, we've got to get off Red Bull for a second and talk about George Russell. First victory in Formula One, finally, for the Mercedes man. No team orders to let Lewis Hamilton continue his streak of a race win, which I did wonder if that would come into play at some point, but George Russell taking the victory, and Mercedes 1-2 as well at Interlagos. An incredible race when everything was kind of going crazy around Russell during large parts of that race, and having to deal with the safety car restart as well after Lando Norris dropped out of the Grand Prix late on. Russell kept his cool and showed that he is one of those top-level elite drivers now in a top car, Ian.
And he asked the question as well, didn't he, of his team, that second safety car restart. Are we going to be a 1-2 or are we racing? And he was quite categorically told, you're racing, but I think it was race fairly, I think, if I remember correctly. And so that laid it on the line for him. It was like, right, okay, this is not going to be handed to me on a platter then today. I'm going to have to fight Lewis over these last 10, 11 laps. And he just did a fantastic job all weekend. Sprint race, superb, with his duel against Max. That was on your seat stuff, and came out of that superbly, and then just made an absolute brilliant getaway at the start of the Grand Prix, ensured that neither Lewis or Max behind him could get anywhere near him. And he just pretty much controlled it from start to finish. And that's what we have been waiting to see from George. We knew he had that in him. If we think back to that Bahrain, that race in Bahrain when he took over from Lewis, and we knew then that how close he came to dismantling Valtteri from pole position by just a couple of tenths a second for the first time he'd sat in that Mercedes that season. Close to claiming pole. And but for things going wrong with Mercedes and their strategy and tyre swaps, etc., he would almost certainly have got that first race win then. So without a shadow of a doubt, again, it was one of those feel-good stories, like Kevin being on pole for the sprint, Claire getting the pole for qualifying. Just a great story coming out of that race, in contrast to all the other contentiousness going on. But bear in mind, Ollie, not just at Red Bull, but you had Ferrari as well, and even Alpine. So, you know, we could even talk about those two teams as well and their team order situations. But as you say, we're on George right now, and I'm totally delighted for him.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that as well. George just did the perfect weekend, really, didn't he? It was there wasn't much. It was as close to perfect as we're going to see from him.
He was pointing in the wrong direction in the gravel on the Friday.
Well, yeah, but you got Magnussen pole, so we'll allow him that one. So, but it's when it came to the actual racing, he was perfect. I mean, I actually predicted the victory, so I'll take my plaudits on those ones. Thank you very much. But, you know, it was... But, no, George, he did what he needed to in the sprint, got himself in position, and then when you knew you had him and Lewis on the front row together, I don't think there were many people that were thinking Lewis isn't going to get him here. I think so. There was the expectation was probably Lewis was going to keep his winner season run going. This was that opportunity. It seemed almost destiny, didn't it, really, where he'd picked up his citizenship and he was going to win. But no, George weirdly just coped with the pressure perfectly. He didn't seem fazed about having Lewis on his tail at all. He didn't, when he was battling the other drivers, didn't seem bothered. And yeah, you wouldn't want to come up against him, would you? There's a lot of drivers that get that future champion tag, but I think he's well and truly earned himself that tag now.
There were shades of Lewis's first win in George's win, in the fact that, you know, it wasn't completely straightforward. He had safety car restarts to contend with that he aced perfectly. One of the most difficult tracks on the calendar to get a safety car restart done because of the long drag. To the first corner, and it was just perfect on both occasions. He was faster than Lewis at the end, got out of DRS when he needed to. As we rightly said, he went against Verstappen, got it done. He went against, he got it done. Pretty sublime on Saturday and Sunday from him. And as Ian rightly pointed out, well overdue after Sakhir 2 years ago. I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that next season, especially with the way that Mercedes are looking up.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, actually, is how big is this? It's great for George Russell, obviously, first Grand Prix victory. Wonderful scenes of him talking to his dad on the phone and everything like that. But more importantly, what does this mean for Mercedes going into 2023? Because they have suddenly clicked. After all the troubles they've had at the beginning of the year with the car design, with the lack of performance coming out of it, these last few races of the season, they've found maybe not the magic formula, but so to speak, because you look at them and you think, well, Abu Dhabi could be a fantastic Grand Prix for them as well to finish the season after we know how well they performed there last year and how well they've done at Interlagos this weekend in the same way they did that in Brazil last year as well. And then going into 2023, are we actually going to start saying it's a three-way title fight from the looks of it at this point in 2023 between Ferrari, Red Bull and Mercedes, Sam?
I'm going to stick my neck out and say no, because it's going to be a two-way fight between Red Bull and Mercedes. Ferrari have got too many...
You're not giving Ferrari any love.
You saw them this weekend. Leclerc has been on at them, telling them all he wants to see now that the championship's done and dusted. He just wants to see procedural improvements and improvements in the background. He wants them to be flawless in their weekend execution. Yes, Ferrari may well get a win or two next year, just like they've had some wins this year. But they've got so many problems still, that car performance problems, they're difficult to fix, but Mercedes have fixed them. Ferrari have had procedural problems all year. They haven't fixed them. I think... Unless a miracle happens and Ferrari can get its act together on that basis, it's a two-horse or two-team race next year for the title, but Ferrari isn't in that picture. Bombshell.
Wow.
I mean, the problem for Ferrari is that Sainz at the end of the race was slower and fresher tyres than both Mercedes in front of him. But Mercedes have a lot more to prove in terms of improvement, in terms of straight line speed, drag efficiency, getting little bits out of their car. Now it remains to be seen. I imagine they'll change up the concept a little bit, but now it's all going to be down to how quickly they hit the ground running in Bahrain. Because if they've got to spend however many, I think Toto said 8 to 10 months, didn't he, they lost in development time to sort out issues. Now, if they've got to do even half of that next year, they're going to be in the same situation. So they've got to hit the ground running. But it's definitely positive news. Definitely positive news.
Abu Dhabi will provide us with a better yardstick as to where Mercedes actually is at the moment in relation to the pace gap to Red Bull. You've got to think that Mexico City and Lagos are two very, very unique tracks.
Yeah.
And Abu Dhabi is obviously far more mundane compared to those two. And I think for Mercedes there, if they are certainly on a par with Red Bull, or even just that slightly bit lagging behind, then they know they will have made the improvements over the course of this season that they've been seeking all along, and that they will have a quite considerably solid platform going into next year, because the update package that they took to the United States Grand Prix has been the one that's been the game changer for them so far. It's now about adding to that. And as I say, if in Abu Dhabi they are closer, then they know going into next season their confidence will be so much higher, and they will should be that much closer. In relation to Ferrari, Ferrari remind me very much of my own football team.
That is damning.
Well, what I'm going to say is that we had a manager in charge that could not get the best out of a great squad of players. It worked well at times. We were able to have good moments, but the results really weren't there following quite a reasonable start to his tenure. And then we got rid of him recently. We brought a new manager, and lo and behold, things have changed. Am I suggesting that Ferrari needs to change Mattia Binotto? Potentially, because there's something going on inside that team, because that team, given the sum of its parts, is just not performing. That team should be doing so much better than it really is or has been doing over these past few months. It gave us a glimpse at the start of the season of what was possible, and then over the course of that season, it has unraveled in various ways. And as we've discussed at length on this podcast, with strategy calls, unreliability, even Charles Leclerc making mistakes, it needs something or someone to gel that entire team together, because I think, it is better than the sum of its parts right now, and it should absolutely be challenging Mercedes and Red Bull on a much stronger footing going into next season than it is at present.
Yeah, because Friday qualifying was laughable, really, wasn't it? It was really laughable. You had, at one point, Leclerc was in the pits up on his jacks, and they fitted three different sets of tyres on before he went out. They went from Inters to Usofts to New Soft. It was just, what on earth was going on? All the while, Sainz sat behind him. And then at the end of the session, in Q3, Ferrari was so convinced that it was going to rain that they sent Carlos Sainz out on a set of softs. Go figure.
I mean, it's the usual Ferrari foul-ups, Ewan. It's an inability to make the correct decision in the right moment that has continually cost them of being competitive in this Drivers' and Constructors' World Championship this year. But if Abu Dhabi is going to be the yardstick for Mercedes and perhaps a title push for next season, we don't have to wait too long because of course that's just round the corner. We will be back after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, diving into all of the fallout from the final race of the season. And of course, we'll have official podcasts as well as we continue in towards 2023. Ladies can be competitive to see if Ferrari can fix their problems both on and off the pit wall. And what will happen now for Red Bull after the drama of Interlagos and the Brazilian Grand Prix this weekend. Gentlemen, a big thanks for joining us. Ian, especially yourself on your travels, and we will dive into everything in Abu Dhabi in a week's time. Until then though, gpfan.com and GPFans Global on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok as well, and give us a like and a subscribe on the YouTube channel too. Take care.